Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Locally, tax increases seem to be the order of the day. Earlier this month, the city of Charlotte's proposed budget included a property tax increase, its first in 6 years. Now Mecklenburg County has unveiled its proposed budget, and it too includes a tax increase, the second in as many years. In presenting the budget to County Commission, County Manager Dina DiIorio spoke about increased needs for county services in the face of declining revenues. In fact, the budget is up 5.5% over the current year, so the numbers are big.
The recommended operating budget for fiscal year 2025 totals $2.5 billion, an increase of $130 million, or 5.5%, over the last year. For the county, this is a lean budget, and there are no more cuts to be made.
And that means property taxes are likely to rise. And to help us understand the goals of the budget, the revenue shortfall that dictates this increase, and to understand the impact it may have on you, Dina DiIorio is here to take us through the budget, along with Mecklenburg County Budget Director Adrian Cox. Welcome back to you all. Good to see you.
Good to see you and hear you, Mike. Good morning.
Good morning. Dina, I'm going to start with you because the cost of everything has gone up since the pandemic. Inflation is affecting all but the wealthiest folks, and maybe some of them as well. The county raised property taxes last year following the revaluation. The city is likely to raise property taxes, as I said, this July. You're proposing a tax increase. Does it worry you that this is a perfect storm that's going to negatively impact a lot of people?
Well, we're always worried about the impact of increases in property tax on residential homeowners as well as commercial homeowners. It really cuts across the board. So we really try to find the right balance between what our needs are and what we need to do to provide services to the county, as well as taking into consideration what the financial impact is to taxpayers. But it is a balance.
And we
the
know
other part that I'll say is, you know, 1 cent of that tax increase was known last year when we passed the new capital improvement plan and put the $2.5 billion school bond on the ballot. So we knew that was coming, but then we had some other things for fiscal year 25 that, quite frankly, we were not anticipating that led to a proposed tax increase for next year.
And we do have we have a lot of vacant retail office space in the uptown area and some other areas scattered around Charlotte and the county as well. And people have said that if that space remains vacant, it's going to tip the scales toward taxes going toward residential property as opposed to commercial property. Is that playing a role in this at all?
I don't know if that particularly is playing a role, but again, when we look at tax increases, we particularly pay attention to what the impact is going to be on the residential homeowner. And so that's really the driving principle when we look at tax increases.
In your presentation to County Commission, you said that for the past several years, quote, the county has experienced significant revenue growth, which allowed you to provide much needed services and to invest in board priorities, which we'll talk about, but in fact also to expand into new service areas. It's also allowed you to give employee raises, but now these revenues have slowed. Why?
Well, there's a few things going on there. First of all, sales tax is relatively flat going into next fiscal year. We have experienced double-digit increases in sales tax over the last several years. And for next year, sales tax is going to be relatively flat, which we haven't seen in a number of years. So that's a significant growth revenue that we won't have for fiscal year 2025. In addition to that, we have three revenue sources that are actually going to decline fairly significantly in fiscal year 2025. The first one is a $12.3 million loss in revenue due to the sheriff no longer taking federal inmates at the local detention center. There's also a reduction in revenue not by the Register of Deeds office, but collected by the Register of Deeds office based on real estate transactions. And so those fees and charges will be reduced by about $5.7 million. And that's based on what's happening in the economy, slowing of the real estate market, as well as increases in interest rates have really slowed activity in the real estate market. And then there's a $2.3 million revenue loss in administrative reimbursements for Medicaid. And that's just based on a calculation for how the county would receive those. So those three revenue sources result in a $20.3 million loss in revenue, which likely won't come back, or if it does, it's going to take a significant amount of time to do so. And then, of course, not having that significant increase in sales tax that we've experienced in the past.
Adrienne, I don't know that you can answer this question, but I'm assuming that the sales tax increase over the last several years had to do with people getting back into the marketplace with pent-up demand following the pandemic, and also the rising cost of things. If things cost more, you're going to collect more sales tax on that. Is the slowdown in sales tax because people are not buying as much anymore because of inflation, the very thing that drove some of those tax revenues up?
Well, I think that's probably part of it. I think certainly sales tax is a function of the overall economy. And so, as the manager said, we were seeing double-digit increases in sales tax in 2025, just budget to budget. It's relatively flat. It's a 2.6% increase, so significantly less.
So if we're not seeing an increase or a continuation of the spending spree, Dina, is that an indication that people are tapped out? And if they're tapped out, isn't this going to add to their woes?
Well, I think it's always going to be an impact. And so we look at the impact that it will have on our residential property owners. And, Adrian in his presentation to the board, gave some what the potential impacts could be based on the value of somebody's house. So if you have a $250,000 house in Mecklenburg County, a 1.5-cent tax increase will cost you about $38 a year. On the higher side, if you have a $600,000 house, the impact would be about $90 a year. So yes, it's an impact, and we take that seriously, but we feel like the impact is relatively modest based on the needs of a growing community.
So that people understand how this works, your job, Dina DiOrio, is to find ways to fund not only the services that the county must provide, but also to fulfill the vision set forth by the members of the county commission. They set the priorities, and your job is to figure out how to make that happen. Their priorities are health access, housing insecurity, educational attainment, workforce development, environmental stewardship, early childhood development, and reducing racial disparities. How many of these are considered must-dos as opposed to being part of a kind of wish list that if we have enough money, we need to do these things?
Well, I think these are really important for everybody in our community. And so I don't think it's a matter of whether or not we must do these things, because I think they are critical to a vibrant city and county like we have here in Mecklenburg. The question really becomes, how much can we do in any single year based on the amount of money that we have available? And that's the other thing that we try to balance.
How much of these things on the list that I just mentioned, all these goals that the commission has set for itself, have led to the rising costs? How much of it is due to that and the expansion of services over time? And how much of this need for a tax increase is due to falling revenues?
So the tax increase is primarily due to falling revenue. So if you look at the tax increase, excluding the 1 cent for the capital improvement plan, the half a cent that we have proposed will generate a little over $14 million. The revenue loss that we've just talked about is over $20 million. So we've been able to absorb a portion of that revenue loss, but we can't absorb all of it. So it's really a function of the tax, of the revenue loss, not as much around the investments that we're making in county services.
And Adrian, you're the guy with the pencil and the spreadsheet. So how have you absorbed some of the discrepancy between revenues and expenses?
So during our budget process, as part of the manager's recommended budget, we've identified at least $25.5 million of general fund realignments, things that we've done in the budget to be able to not have an impact on taxpayers. Some of that is cost savings we have in the sheriff's office with reduced revenues, some contracts. Our IT department has looked over its contracts and have eliminated some obsolete software and renegotiated some other ones. And then there's just a list of different reductions that we have tried to identify in realignments to avoid an impact on the taxpayer.
The sheriff's department has come up in this conversation twice now, and Dina, you first brought it up, the fact that the Mecklenburg County Sheriff is no longer housing federal inmates, and so some of the money that used to come to that department from the federal government is no longer coming to that department. That was a decision by the sheriff. In an era where we are searching to find money and we're facing a tax increase, was that a mistake?
Well, I think I don't want to speak for Sheriff McFadden, but the decision that he made was based on staffing concerns that he had at the jail. He had gotten an inspection by the state Department of Health and Human Services that told him that his staffing was inadequate and he had to reduce the population in the jail to make sure that he had adequate staffing ratios. And one way for him to accomplish that was to stop taking federal inmates, that he could reduce the population in the jail and get those staffing ratios in a much better place. So he had a balance. He had to make those decisions based on the needs that he had because he is experiencing a pretty significant vacancy rate right now.
So would it be accurate to say that his decision to forego that income for these federal inmates in the local jail system is offset by the costs he would have had to incur to make that safe and possible?
Well, I think the cost he was incurring was really related to overtime because he still was unable to fill his full-time vacancy. So, yes, there was cost that was he was incurring for overtime, but he had that money in his budget because we budgeted in full-time positions. So instead of being able to fill his positions, he was using that money for overtime to be able to make sure he had adequate staffing. So there were no additional costs associated with it. There was just a reduction in the revenue.
Okay. We just heard you in a little clip I played from your presentation to County Commission on this budget, that this budget is, quote, lean and no further cuts can be made. Are commissioners likely to try, though?
Well, now that I've put my budget out into the public, it's really up to them to make the decisions about where they want to, make changes to the budget. We're very cognizant of what they'd like to see in the budgets. Their board priorities are very important. And so hopefully we've been able to strike the balance that is necessary for them to adopt the budget with the tax increase in it. But again, that's something that they'll have to ultimately decide.
And Adrian, this budget is up by $130 million from last year. And when you're talking about a several billion dollar budget, that's like pocket change, I suppose. But it's 5.5% higher than it was in the current year. Is that after whatever cuts you found to make before this proposal was submitted? And how much more would it have been if you couldn't have found those cuts?
So that's absolutely right. That's after making those reductions and realignments. It would have been an additional $25 million if we had not been able to identify realignments to offset the tax rate increase.
And when you say realignments, this is not money being wasted. This is this money being wasted, or is this money that a thorough examination of what's being spent, like anybody's budget, you can just say, well, okay, I can live without that. Is that essentially what these cuts were made up of?
It's doing just that. It's taking a look at the budget, seeing what we can do without and what is a better way to utilize the funds so it doesn't have an impact on the tax rate.
And so the budget process is an excuse to go through that exercise. Would that also be accurate to say?
Well, we actually go through that exercise every year. And in fact, since 2015, the managers identified $204 million on
that. We have to take a break. Adrian Cox is with us. He's Mecklenburg County's budget director. Dina DiOrio is the Mecklenburg County manager. There's lots to talk about with the proposed budget that goes to the commission and which the commission will vote on in short order. But we'll do that when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the Mecklenburg County budget with the designers of that budget, Mecklenburg County Manager Dina DiOrio and Adrian Cox, who is the budget director for the county. We have rising costs, diminishing revenues, and a possible tax increase in the offing, which we'll be talking about in a moment. We talked about falling revenues and what's causing some of that, Dina, but what's driving the rising costs that you're facing and that you're trying to address in this budget?
Well, I think there's two, well, really one big factor, I would say, and Adrian can give you some additional details, but I think it's really our investment in people. I think if you look at, you know, the cost of increased compensation for employees, that is a big chunk of what's rising in our costs. In addition to that, you know, we gave a significant allocation to Charlotte Mecklenburg Schools, but the vast majority of that, about 65% of that increase, was also investments in people. And so, you know, we all know how hard it's been to recruit and retain staff, and we have to have competitive salaries, competitive benefits, in order for us to be able to get the resources that we need in terms of human capital to provide services. So I think that is one of the biggest drivers in this year's budget. And I don't know if Adrian, you have others that you want to talk about.
Adrian? The schools, that's a 7.4% increase, which is primarily compensation, as the manager mentioned. For county staff, compensation is a 5.5% increase. And then for other operating costs, we're looking at a 5.2% increase just for everything else that we do.
Yeah. Percentages don't tell the whole story. Raw dollars and cents really tell the whole story, I guess. But the city is proposing pay increases for their workers, citing exactly the same thing that you just talked about, Dina, the difficulty in attracting and keeping workers and the need to be competitive with the private sector and probably with the county. And the reverse is true with you, being competitive with the city. You're calling for a $33.6 million investment in county employees. How does that break down?
So there's a few things there. There's one is an across the board 3% salary increase for all of our employees. That's about $14.3 million. And then we will also provide a performance-based pay increase for all of our employees that will range from either 0 to 5% depending on performance. That's $12.1 million. $3.4 million is the increased contribution requirements into the state pension system, the local government employees retirement system. We have additional overtime costs, $1.9 million in youth and family services and public assistance eligibility. We also have to annualize positions that were added in the middle of the year. That's $1.1 million. And so then that's really the vast majority of that will make up the $33.6 million.
And the city is trying to raise or proposing to raise hourly employee hourly rates to somewhere in, I don't have the figures with me now, but they're somewhere in the neighborhood of $20 an hour plus. How does that compare to what hourly employees, if you have them, at the county would be making with this new
budget? Our minimum salary for all of our hourly employees is $20 an hour. So we, you know, continue to work with that. I don't know. The trouble that you have when you raise the minimum salary, the minimum hourly wage, is it causes compression all the way up the ladder. And so one of our board members asked us what it would cost the county to raise the minimum hourly rate to $23 an hour. And that would cost us about $40 million to take into account the minimum salary plus all the compression.
Explain compression.
So if you raise somebody from 20 to 23, then the person who's making 23 has to go up the commensurate amount. The person who makes 25 or 26 has to go up the commensurate amount. You can't just raise the minimum to 23. You have to take it all the way across the board. And that can be very expensive.
Will the pay increases that you're proposing, if the commission says yes to them, and whatever you're considering for hourly folks, will that make you competitive with the city? Will it make you competitive with other area municipalities? Will it make you competitive with the private sector?
Well, we think we have to continue to maintain that. I think the longer that we can provide competitive salaries for people who are in our positions, we think we can be competitive. I think we always have to look at what our competitors are paying. And we look not just at local government, city, and other counties in the state of North Carolina, but we also look at the private sector. And we adjust all the time in terms of what we have to do to actually hire people. So it's an ongoing challenge.
So we have these rising costs, and we're going to talk about some of the other services that the county provides and what you're proposing to do to increase those services or support those services in other areas as we go through this conversation. But let's go back to the tax increase, because that's on everybody's mind. Both Mecklenburg County and the city of Charlotte are considering increases of 1.5 cents per $100 of assessed property value. The city says that will increase city homeowner taxes by about $54 a year. You said something along the lines of how much?
So we look at it based on the value of your home. So if your home is valued at about $250,000, mm-hmm. it would be about $37.50 a year. If the median home value right now in Mecklenburg County is $383,000. So if your house is around the median, your increase would be about $57 or $58 per year. And if you're above the median at about $600,000, your tax increase would be about $90 a year.
So, Adrian, I'm going to break it down a little more. The city of Charlotte is considering a charge of 27.54 cents per $100 of assessed value. The county's version, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, comes out to 48.81 cents per $100. Both of these municipalities are using a 1.5 cent increase. And the city budget is about $4.2 billion. Yours is $2.5 billion. And given that the county has more residents in it than the city does, and therefore more property to tax than the city does, why the difference in the rate? Why is the county's rate higher?
So the county's rate is higher than the city's because most of the services we provide are health and human services, as well as supporting the schools. And a lot of those don't have revenue streams, like, say, the airport or some of the enterprise funds that we have.
But isn't the airport not only self-sustaining, but don't the funds that it raises or collects stay within the airport?
That's correct. But I'm talking about in comparison to the size of our budget. So that's why the city has, you know, the size of their budget in comparison to ours. But it's really just a function of what is the cost in order to provide the services.
So let me just add on to that a little bit. So they have a bigger budget, $4.5 billion, but the portion of those services that are actually supported by the tax, the general property tax, is smaller than Mecklenburg County because they have airport that's self-sustaining. They have water that's self-sustaining. They have cats that's self-sustaining. So that portion that's supported by property tax is smaller than what you have with Mecklenburg County because we don't have all of those self-supporting services.
The county raised taxes last year. The city didn't, and the city manager, Marcus Jones, warned that not doing so would cause what's happening this year to happen, in fact, the need for a tax increase. We do these property valuations every 4 years, I believe. We have to do them every 7 years by law, but we've decided to do it more frequently so it won't be such a shock to the system when the revaluations come in. So that means, if I've done the math right, we're about 2 years away from the next property revaluation. Is it likely that the county will raise taxes again next year, or will you likely wait until after the next revaluation to do that?
Well, we can't know because we don't know what will come, you know, over the next year if we have, you know, other revenue losses that we have to take into consideration. It really is a balancing act between revenues and what we have to pay for. So we don't know the answer to that. But what I will tell you is that with the capital improvement program, we know that there will be a projected 1 cent tax increase. I believe it's fiscal year 2028 is the next one. Is that right, Adrian?
I believe there's two in 28 and one in 2029.
That's 2 cents in 2028 and 1 cent in 2029. So those are already planned out. And so we've been very open and upfront about what it will cost to pay for those bonds and those capital expenses. But the rest of it, we just won't know until we see what happens over the course of the year. So for this year, for example, we really didn't anticipate that revenue loss of $20 million. So we didn't expect to have to raise taxes more than the 1 cent that was already planned.
There are people who live in the city of Charlotte who pay both city and county taxes. There are people who live in Matthews and Mint Hill and Pineville and Davidson, et cetera, that also pay their town's taxes and county taxes. very few people live in the unincorporated area of the county where they just pay county tax. But in Charlotte, we know that your tax increase will be coupled with Charlotte's tax increase. And do we know if the towns surrounding Charlotte are also considering an increase? In other words, will people in Huntersville also be paying an additional Huntersville tax on top of your property tax increase? Do we know that yet?
Adrian, do you know what the towns are proposing?
I do not know about what the towns are proposing yet. I do know at least for the Huntersville Fire Protection Service District, and this is in the ETJ outside of unincorporated areas of Huntersville, there is a little bit more than a 2 cent increase in order to cover the cost of fire protection in that area. But I don't know about the rest of the jurisdictions, what they're proposing.
We seem to have to go to Raleigh on genuflected knee all the time to get permission to do almost anything, particularly to raise sales taxes. We don't have to go to Raleigh to raise property taxes?
No.
She said with a smile on her face. we know that the city of Charlotte, at least, is considering, the city council is considering asking the city manager to reduce his proposed tax increase. If that happens, could that influence county commissioners to do something similar?
I'm not 100% sure. I think that the Board of County Commissioners really looks at what is in front of them as it relates to the county budget. So I don't know that what the city does will influence what the county commission will do.
Because Marcus Jones, like you, I believe, said pretty much this is well thought out, and what we're asking for is what we need. And you've said this is a very sparse budget, a very pared back budget. Nothing else is left to cut. But if commissioners came to you and said you got to reduce it, what would happen?
Well, we'd have to go back and see where there's, you know, where there would be opportunity to do it. I mean, I think you'd end up having to look at, you know, your allocation to CMS, as well as, you know, the allocation to county, you know, employee compensation, because those are the two largest buckets of funding available. And I don't believe the board would be interested in doing either one of those things, but again, it's ultimately their decision. Right. It would be really hard for us to find $14 million of cuts without impacting services.
And some of that influence might come from public hearings, the first of which I believe will be tomorrow at 6 p.m. at the Government Center, where speakers can sign up at that meeting and make a comment in advance online. You mentioned CMS a couple of times. Let's talk about that. One decision that you made in the course of putting together this budget was to fully fund the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools request for $46.4 million in additional operating support, which brings their total request. These numbers may be a little outdated, so correct me if I'm wrong. The total request is around $660.4 million. Is that accurate?
It's about $676.3 million, including capital maintenance. Yeah, including the capital maintenance piece, yeah.
Okay, so in the past, has CMS usually gotten what they asked for, or has that number usually been diminished?
So last year I fully funded their requests, and that was the first time I had, in my years as county manager, ever fully funded their request.
What made the difference?
I really think that there's a lot more transparency in terms of how county funding will be used, and that was a big driver for me. You know, I think in prior years before that, there wasn't a tremendous amount of transparency about how county funding would be used. And then there was not a lot of transparency or accountability how county funding was used. And so this last couple of years with Superintendent Hill, you know, putting together her budgets, there's just a lot more of that, which I think gives me a lot more comfort about how county dollars will be used.
Did this come about because of a changeover in the school board and the changeover in the administration at CMS and the little dust up that the county commission, particularly the county commission leader, George Dunlap, had with the school board a couple of years ago, where he said money needs to be attached to accountability?
Well, I think that's what we've been driving for a number of years. And so I think we feel better about where we are in terms of the leadership at the school system, the school board. And so the relationship, I think, has gotten a lot better. I think there's a lot more communication, again, a lot more transparency. And, you know, a lot of this is based on trust, right? So I think we're building a tremendous amount of trust with CMS and the leadership there. And it gives us, you know, comfort that that our dollars are going to be used in a way that's going to strengthen the school system.
And just as you characterized your budget as being bare bones, CMS Superintendent Dr. Crystal Hill said something similar about the system's ask of the county.
We've done everything that we can to lift the most high need areas. In other words, there's nothing that is on our list that we will be taking to the county on May 8th that we can do without.
And she said that prior to submitting her request. So now we have two entities who have cut their budgets to the bone and nothing left to cut. If that is true, is this all due to inflation? What's driving all of this?
Well, I think it is. I think it's inflation as it relates to the providing, you know, services and, of course, employee compensation. But again, for the county, in our case, it's really about, you know, a loss in revenue. That was what really drove our tax increase for fiscal year 25.
And even before she presented her budget to the school board presented their budget to the county commission and to you, they were fairly certain that you would fully request or fully fund their budget request. And after she said there was nothing they could do without, she said this.
We would have to go back to our current operating budget and make some decisions, some tough decisions about what we have to cut and what we have to do without.
Meaning, I suppose, there's always more to cut if you look more carefully. Are you certain that your budget and that her budget is as lean as it can be? In any way that might either lessen or negate the need for a property tax increase?
Well, I think what we both have said is that we'd have to go back and see what we could cut, but I don't think it means that there wouldn't be an impact on services to do it. I mean, I could cut things, but then I'd have to say, well, we're not going to be able to do some of the things that we're doing now. We won't be able to maintain our parks to the level that people have been accustomed to. You know, we won't be able to provide, you know, services necessary to make sure that people get their benefits that they're looking for, or, you know, social work services or nursing services. So there's always a cost when you do and make those kinds of decisions.
I want to come back and after the break and talk just a little bit more about CMS, about CPCC, because you're fully funding their budget request. And then we'll talk about affordable housing and the need for funding health services, which is one of the primary duties of the county. And more when we come back. Dina DiIorio is here. She is Mecklenburg County Manager. Adrian Cox is Mecklenburg County's Budget Director. There's a public hearing on this proposed budget, as I said a moment ago, tomorrow at 6 p.m. at the Government Center. And you can sign up to make your opinions about this known at that time or comment in advance online. We're coming right back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dina DiIorio is with us, Mecklenburg County Manager, along with Adrian Cox, Mecklenburg County's Budget Director. We're talking about the proposed budget, which may necessitate a tax increase. And also we're talking about some of the elements in that budget, including the fully funding recommendation to fully fund Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools' budget request. Mecklenburg County Commissioner Arthur Griffin, who once chaired the school board, did not like the request that CMS brought before the commission, not one bit.
This is perhaps the worst budget that I've seen in 30 years for CMS as it relates to student achievement. This appears to be a people and things budget, but very light in terms of academic excellence.
That gets back to that accountability portion of the equation, I suppose. Commissioner Pat Cotham said parts of CMS's proposal hit her in the gut. You had no misgivings, Dina?
I did not, no.
How do you explain theirs?
I think it's just a difference of perspective. I think, you know, again, I think in order to be able to provide high quality services, whether it's at the school system or whether it's at the county or the city, you have to have well-compensated employees who are going to work hard to provide the services and do the work that needs to be done. And so I think that really aligns with what CMS proposed. It really aligns with the county's philosophy around employee compensation. So I understand that they have a opinion and a perspective, but I don't agree with their opinion or perspective on this issue.
So while we're on the subject of education, what do you think, and maybe there's no way to answer this because maybe nobody knows, what do you think will be the impact on the county of expanding these opportunity scholarships? As everybody knows, because we've talked about it so frequently on this program, the opportunity scholarship program has been expanded, and the legislature in their short session this summer is considering adding $300 million to the pot of money to fund those private school vouchers for all. That money is money that could have gone to public schools. It will also remove students from the public schools because the demand seems to be high. And if they choose to go to private school, they're not going to the public schools. If enough people take these scholarships, do you see this as weakening state funding and adding to the funding burden of the county? Or do you see this as removing schools from the public school roster and relieving some of the burden from the county?
I think time will tell on what the impact of that'll be. And I think I'm not really the best person with the knowledge to really speak about that, but what the impact of opportunity scholarships will have on CMS. I think that's really up to CMS to speak to. But what I will say is, and we have said this for a long time, is that the state of North Carolina, the General Assembly, does not fund public education in the state of North Carolina the way that I think is adequate personally. And I think the counties are being forced to pick up way too much of that funding that is really a state responsibility. So that I'm very clear about.
If the state did so, Adrian, you're in the numbers guy. I'm going to ask you this. If the state picked up more of their fair share, let's put it that way, and the county's burden was lessened, would it? The money may not change. The same amount of money might go to all these schools that it's going now. It would just shift the source. Would that lessen the burden on Mecklenburg County property owners?
Well, it certainly could if the state was providing, the full funding for education. Because what's happening now is the counties are having to step in to try to make sure that the schools have their funding to operate.
You're also fully funding Central Piedmont Community College's budget request. How much was that request, and what does it fund, Dina?
So the funding request was about $56 million, but the operating piece was $47.3 million. And the capital piece, what they requested, was 9.3. So we gave them the full operating, and we gave them $6 million for capital maintenance. And it goes, I think a lot of that, and Adrian has more of the details, but I think a lot of it is salary related, maintenance, and other types of infrastructure type costs. Adrian, do you want to speak to that?
Yeah, that is correct. So the county funds primarily the facility maintenance for community colleges, and that also includes the salaries for maintenance as well, and then a little bit of some additional wage benefit, but that's primarily what the cost increase is for.
One of the things that the county commission, one of their goals of the county commission, is workforce development. Is CPCC a piece of that? Is it considered a piece of your goal to increase workforce development?
Absolutely. I think Central Piedmont is our key partner in workforce development. And so we want to make sure that they have everything that they need. Dr. Candy Dietemeyer, I think, has done a tremendous job of really expanding opportunities, not just for students that are going there from CMS, but also people who want to change careers or upskill themselves for different types of jobs. And I think she's done a really good job of making those options available for people.
Both the city and the county are concerned about increasing affordable housing and have launched affordable housing efforts. But before we talk about that, I want to talk about the cost of living here. Smart Assets studied the amount it would take to, quote, live comfortably across 99 major cities in the United States. Here in Charlotte, in Mecklenburg County, a single adult, no children, no spouse, would need a yearly salary of $101,338 or an hourly wage of $48.72 to live comfortably. Where does that fall in terms of average take-home pay in Mecklenburg County?
So what does it mean to live comfortably? Like, how is that defined? Because I'm not sure that number
that
seems
I
pretty
don't
high
know.
to me, $101,000 for a single adult. So, and I'm not saying it's incorrect, but I'm not sure that that's, I don't know what that means when people say live comfortably. I think, you know, when we look at housing affordability, the sort of metric that we use is that nobody should be paying more than 30% of their income on housing. And that's a really hard metric to meet. And so that's why we're trying to find ways to advance affordable housing initiatives to make affordable housing obviously more available to people who need it.
Both, as I said, both Mecklenburg County and the City of Charlotte have made maintaining and increasing the supply of affordable housing a priority. After a series of $50 million bond issues every 2 years, the city manager, Marcus Jones, is now proposing a $100 million bond this fall. You are also, the county is also pumping money into helping people find housing security. With all these efforts from the public sector and from non-governmental organizations, are we making a dent in this, or are we spitting into the wind?
I think that, you know, every person that we can help find an affordable place to live, I think, is a win. So I think, you know, that's why we're working in partnership with United Way on the Home for All strategy to look at the entire system to see if there's ways that we can move upstream to prevent people from being housing insecure, to helping those people who ultimately do become homeless and need an affordable place to live. I think personally, my opinion is you can't build your way out of it. So you have to have multiple strategies to really sort of approach this issue. One of them is to preserve existing affordable housing. You know, you can build new units, but if you're losing what we call naturally occurring affordable housing on the back end, you're not making any progress. And we've done a lot of work in partnering with organizations to try to maintain that naturally occurring affordable housing. We're also trying to keep people in their homes by investing a lot of money in critical home repair so that people can maintain their homes and be able to stay in their homes. And that's particularly important for our senior citizens in Mecklenburg County. We're looking at emergency rental assistance so that people who are, you know, one rent payment away from becoming evicted, you know, can we provide that emergency rental assistance to help them keep their home. We're working on giving, now we give $1.2 million to legal aid to that they can help people who are in a position of becoming evicted to have representation in court, because we know people who have representation, legal representation, are over 90% more likely, or they are actually gonna keep their home and avoid eviction if they have legal representation. So you have to look at it from multiple perspectives, because you just can't build your way out of it. There's just not enough units to be being built for that.
In your budget, you're also proposing spending $1 million for a place called Forest Point Place. That's a permanent supportive housing program serving people over 55 who are experiencing homelessness. What will that $1 million do?
That is for the actual operations of that hotel. That hotel has been in operation for well over a year. We built it with money from the American Rescue Plan during COVID. And it's because we had a number of people over 55 who were homeless with medical conditions that were living in a hotel during COVID. And we kept them there until we could buy this, renovate it, and move them into permanent supportive housing. So we used our ARPA dollars to renovate it. And now this $1 million is gonna be used to operate it, because as we know, American Rescue Plan dollars are going away. And we need to start looking at what we've been funding with that and see what we need to transition into our operating budget.
You're also providing funds to an organization called Roof Above to support their men's shelters. They have 514 beds, I believe, scattered across three locations. There's no questioning the need, but we need to question the reason for the need. How do you explain this homeless problem? I believe it would be accurate to say, because I don't recall it being part of my life as a young person. And I would think you also remember a time when we didn't have tent cities and we didn't have people sleeping on the streets or requiring a lot of these homeless shelters. Where have we dropped the ball?
Well, I don't know if it's necessarily dropping the ball. I do think part of it is there's a lack of affordable housing. And I think there are people who are sleeping in shelters or are unsheltered homelessness who really just can't find an affordable place to live. So we know that that's part of the issue. I think the other part of the issue is we have people who are living in shelters or unsheltered homeless who have severe and persistent mental illness. They suffer with substance abuse issues. They have other behavioral health challenges that really impact their ability to come in from being homeless and want to be housed. And that is, that's a big part of it. So we are investing a lot of money in street outreach teams to actually go out and work with homeless who are unsheltered on the streets to try to convince them to come in and to get treatment and to get services that will allow them to be able to maintain stable housing. One of the proposals in the budget is a $7 million contribution in partnership with the city of Charlotte. We will do seven, they will do seven, to purchase a hotel, convert it for permanent supportive housing for those people with severe and severe and persistent mental illness that in the past have been unwilling to come in and become sheltered. So, you know, there's a lot going on. It's a complex issue. But again, we're trying to look at it from multiple perspectives to see whether or not and how we can make an impact.
You're also budgeting a little over $250,000 for rental subsidies for transitional housing for people in the Criminal Justice Services Reentry Program. These are folks who have been in jail who sometimes have difficulty finding housing because they have difficulty finding a job. Talk about that program.
Yeah, that's a program that we've been running through our Criminal Justice Services Department, and it's part of our reentry services program. And we have been, again, this is something that we had been funding through ARPA, through our American Rescue Plan dollars for the last couple of years to make sure people who are coming out of jail or prison have the ability to find a place to live, because this is what allows them to get a job and really reduces their recidivism rate. And we've had tremendous success with this reentry program. And so now that, again, the American Rescue Plan dollars are going away, this is a program that we think has a lot of value, and now we're transitioning this into our general fund.
So all these funds for affordable housing, or to make more affordable housing available to more people, are part of your goal. It's millions of dollars, part of your goal, the county's goal, to make homelessness in our community, this is a quote, rare, brief, and non-recurring. Where are we in that effort?
Well, we're just getting started. You know, the Home for All strategy is relatively new, and we are starting to build it out. And a lot of these programs that we've talked about are part of the strategy to try to get to a place where, you know, homelessness is rare, brief, and non-recurring. It will take time to get us there, but we think this is a really good start in the right direction.
Both you and the city are working, and by you, I mean the county. The county and the city are working to increase the supply of affordable housing, and yet both the county and the city are proposing property tax increases, which adds to the cost of people with mortgages and eventually filters down to people who pay rent. Does it concern you that even as you work toward making more affordable housing available, you're making it more unaffordable?
I do think that that's something that we consider, which is why when we look at these tax increases, we really look at the impact, particularly on single family homeowners, because that's something that we can easily calculate. It's a little bit harder for us to calculate what the impact is on rents, but we know that, you know, apartment and property managers do pass those rent increases on to their renters. So that is something that we are concerned about. But we also know that the rental market can be cyclical, and it's really based on supply and demand. And so it's not, you know, those rents can fluctuate based on what the demand is in the community. So it's a little bit harder for us to understand how that impacts rents, but we can calculate what the impact will be on property.
One of the county's responsibilities, obviously, is public health. The cost of vaccines is rising, so you're having to cover those costs. You have a lot of programs for people who cannot afford health care. Dental care, particularly for young people, children. You're involved in environmental stewardship and putting money into making the air cleaner, the water cleaner, to be more effective with energy costs and refitting old energy installations with solar. All of this, what I'm about to talk about next, kind of pales in comparison to that. But you're also proposing funding the arts to, I think, the tune of, the Arts and Science Council and the Foundation for the Carolinas asked for $11 million from the city and $10 million from the county to fund the arts through an operation they would run. Your budget calls for $5.4 million for that purpose. Are you saying that they're asking you for 10, you're giving them 5.4?
Well, we already give them money, so we're giving them 5.4, and if you add that to the dollars we already give them, it's about $9.6 million in total, $9.9 million in total.
Okay, so they're asking you for 10, they're asking the city for 11. The city budget proposes $11 million for the arts, but I can't get a straight answer from them about whether or not they're going to do it through this new cooperative effort of the Foundation of the Carolinas and the Arts and Science Council, because they backed away from the ASA. You did not. So do you know if this is going to be a group effort? Very quickly, because I'm out of time.
So, I think that that's the conversation that's ongoing. I think that the foundation having the ASC as a supporting organization is going to be beneficial for this community. And, we're all in and we're going to work through the details.
Public hearing on the budget tomorrow at 6 at the Government Center. You can sign up to speak or comment in advance online. Dina DiOrio, our county manager, and Adrian Cox, Mecklenburg County Budget Director, thank you for the hour.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Wendy Herkey. The senior producers are Gabe Altieri and Sarah D'Elia. Our engineer is Joby Sprinkle. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or subscribe to the podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.